Hello to everyone that will be listening. My name is Julius May. I am a student in social sciences, and for my last methodology class of my program, I have to interview someone that can give me information about sexism in the business world. I am here today with Natasha Dillon, which has more than 20 years experience in business. Thank you very much for coming.
You're very welcome, Jules.
Could you just give us a bit of information about what makes you able to answer questions in the subject that I just introduced?
Yeah, sure. So I am currently a director of a global management consulting firm called Korn Ferry Hay Group. I've been in consulting for about 7 years now. And prior to that, I worked for BP and spent a lot of time working in Houston. And prior to working at BP, I also spent a year working in a couple of organizations in Montreal.
So as I said before, what I'm going to try to work around today is the effect on sexism on the working conditions and opportunities of women in the business world. So first of all, just generally speaking, is the business world an easy place for a woman to make a place for herself?
It's a really good question, actually. So I still think that there is a level of sexism in the business world. I think one of the challenges is that it's almost been pushed underground, so it's a lot more subtle than it used to be, I think. People used to be a lot more overt about sexism, and in some ways, whilst that was disadvantageous to women, it was in other ways easier to deal with because it was more blatant. I still think there are a number of challenges around sexism for women now, which continue to exist, particularly at mid-level and senior level and executive level within organisations.
Did you see a change in the 20 years that you've been working?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, I think, so when I started my career working at BP, it was obviously a very male-dominated industry, and people were very overt around sexism, so people would, you know, make what by today's standards would be quite outlandish comments about women in front of you, and part of that was the nature of the industry, I think. But in some ways, you know, if you were able to challenge that and deal with that head-on, then it was, I guess, in many ways easier to progress, whereas now I think things are potentially a little bit more challenging because it's very much the unsaid. And when you look at the statistics about the percentage of women on boards in North America and here in the UK, where I currently live, very little progress has actually been made within the last few years.
Today, what type of behaviour does a woman in your field have to cope with?
I work with lots of organisations, and I find that the culture can be very different. But there are challenges, I think, particularly around career progression. So if a woman chooses to spend time out of the workplace to raise a family or to have children, I think it can be terrifically difficult when you come back in again. And I think people make all sorts of assumptions around your desires and your need and your wants for progression. So I think people almost assume, you know, you've been off and had children, and therefore you come back and you're not ambitious. And I think for me, when I had my children, I came back being even more ambitious, because I felt that if I was working to be away from my children, it really had to be worth it, and it had to be something that I really wanted to do and was passionate about, and also something that was going to provide a reasonable income and a way that I could do a role that was really going to make a difference. So I think it was something that made me more challenging of the situation around me, and also just more determined to progress in the organisation.
Do you think being a woman impacts the initial outlooks clients would have on you?
I think it depends which clients.
So, okay.
There are some sort of industries that are still quite male dominated, and I think there are some industries that are more conservative. So, you know, if I go and see a banking client, for example, it's not uncommon that I will be dealing almost exclusively with men. If I go into a different industry, so fast-moving consumer goods or consumer products, something like that, it's a little bit more balanced. I think probably the most male-dominated have been investment banking clients. And I think, you know, it's sad but true. I've always felt that you might need to work harder and be a lot better than some of your male counterparts, just to be able to be on an even footing. But I think as you kind of gain in confidence and maturity, perhaps, and definitely experience, you learn that there are certain things that women can typically present themselves as being, which aren't particularly helpful. So I'm a big believer in still being feminine at work, but also being very strong. And I think there are certain things that women are renowned for, fairly or unfairly. So things like getting emotional in the workplace. Often women are assumed to be less rational and logical, which I think is completely untrue. But there are certain ways that you present yourself, and even things like learning how to work with your body language, being very careful about how you dress. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if I'm going into a meeting which I know is going to be male dominated, I would always wear a trouser suit. I'm not going to go in there wearing a dress. So I think, you know, women have to not just be better and work harder, but they also have to think harder about how they present themselves in certain situations.
So from your whole experience, do you feel like your employers treated you differently because you're a woman?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all my employers have. My previous career, if you like, was built around commercial and finance, and I think the differences were more marked there between men and women. I remember very early on in my career that I was in a team of 11 people and the only woman, and would have to fight really hard to get any point heard in a meeting. And then, you know, one of my colleagues would say exactly what I'd said, and everyone would turn around and say, fantastic idea. So it was very difficult early on in my career, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I just found myself some really great mentors and didn't really focus on gender.
Okay.
So I had, throughout my career, actually, I've been really fortunate to have people who would speak for me and advise me. And I think I just made a mental note to myself very early on, just not to make a big deal about being a woman and actually just get on with being really good. And I think people have got limited listening for it. And it's, you know, in retrospect, it's probably wrong because it wasn't surfacing some of the issues. But I almost intentionally avoided any sort of diversity for women groups and any of that sort of stuff because I just didn't want to be labelled as, you know, talking about unfairness. So I just kind of got my head down and got on and got results, really, which, you know, probably was a great singular strategy for me, but I'm not sure it did a huge amount in terms of moving things forward for women. And I think now I'm in a position where I'm able to, through some of the teaching that I do, and also I mentor a lot of younger women. Mm-hmm. And the most common question I still get is, how do you do it all? How do you manage being a senior leader in the business and also having young children? And how do you do that juggle? And it always makes me smile because I'm not sure there are many men who people ask that question to.
Which is a shame because men have exactly the same issue. And you were talking about the problems being very hard to work and a lot more implicit. And with these implicit problems, what kind of initiatives do you think can help solve the issue?
I'm still a big believer in mentoring, and I think I'm an even bigger believer in equipping women with tools. So I remember I was probably in my early 20s going on a course called The Influential Woman, which was basically about assertiveness training. And I think there's still room for some of that stuff, but I think, you know, we know so much more now about how people make an impact. There's some fantastic work being done by people like Amy Cuddy around presence and what you do with your body language, by you know, others, Olivia Fox-Caban around charisma. We know so much more about the whole field of neuroscience and the impact. And I think there are so many tools. There are things like vocal training. So a number of studies have shown that because of a woman's vocal range and pitch, they're not taken seriously. There's all this sort of stuff that you can do. But I think, you know, there's something about just helping women understand that they don't have to be men. So a lot of successful women in business become more alpha male than a lot of men, and I'm not sure that's the answer to everything. And I think, you know, I know of people I've worked with, the two women who I've worked for have probably been more difficult to work for than any man I've ever worked for. So I think there is something around, you know, really helping other women out and helping people up the ladder. But I also, you know, I mentor young men too. I don't think anybody has a particularly easy time starting out in business now. I think things are incredibly competitive just to get there and to stay there. And I think, you know, regardless of gender, we all should be playing more of a role in helping people be the best that they can be and helping people meet their potential. And if you just so happen to be a woman, then maybe you have a slightly different toolkit in some ways than if you're a man. But I think, you know, a lot of this is the business world is incredibly demanding of anybody. And, you know, we can equip people so that they feel more powerful.
And the tools you were talking about, are they accessible tools or are they tools that you have to go get yourself?
Well, I think with the internet now, you know, it's astonishing how much brilliant stuff you can just get for free. Mm-hmm. So one really good source, I think, to learn a little bit more about impact and speaking, which is something that women typically don't do as well as men, or at least not perceived to be doing it as well as men, you know, using something like TED Talks, you know, which is free and just phenomenal information. So I think, you know, some of the tools you've got to go and get yourself, but I think learning is so much more accessible. It's almost the opposite problem. It's how do you find those real gems or those needles in the haystack, because there's just so much information available. It's almost like, you know, you go into Google and you put something in around, you know, tools for women, you're going to get millions and millions and millions of responses. So it is about picking those few things. But I think also, as organisations, increasingly, there's a responsibility to be kind of curators of some of this stuff and help employees find information that's really accessible and really valuable. And I think, you know, there is definitely room for some coaching and face-to-face development and learning. But I think also, you know, just the way of the world now, there's a lot of really valuable stuff out there. And I think organisations could be doing a lot more to help women and ethnic minority groups and other minority groups as well, because I think some of the same challenges exist there.
But do you think a part of it should be the state's responsibility to kind of make sure the quotas are respected and that there's no discrimination, that the programmes are put in place?
Well, it's really interesting. So the whole debate about quotas is raging here in the UK. And I have to say, I'm not a fan of quotas, because I think all that happens is, you know, people get put into positions, but there's always a question mark over them. Yeah. So, you know, it will lead to behaviours like, or challenges like, you only got there, you only got the job because you're a woman. I think people play all sorts of games. So in some other companies, where there've been quotas, what's happened is you see a massive increase in the number of non-executive directors who are female, but not executive directors. So it's almost like, you know, they're giving the jobs with arguably less power, you know, to the women to make up the numbers. So I think for me, it's more around facilitating women getting to the top, but also understanding why it may not appeal to them. Mm-hmm. So it was quite interesting. One of my colleagues wrote a paper about diversity recently, and one of the common assumptions was that women drop out of the workforce at a certain level because they choose to have children. Mm-hmm. And actually, what this piece of research showed was that the same pattern applied to women who chose not to have children. So there is something around just the environment at the top that women, it just doesn't appeal to them. And it's very easy to say, well, they took time out because they had children, but actually the statistics don't seem to represent that. And so I think there is something around that. I think the other pieces, other studies have shown that when an organisation is truly diverse at the top and when there are more women on boards, organisations tend to outperform their peers. So there's a definite business case for diversity as well.
So can also be an advantage, so that it's that difficult, because you learn a lot about the darkest things that happen in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, so again, it's a sweeping generalisation, but men quite often have a lot more empathy, have a better sort of instinctive capability to go in and read situations. So in my kind of role, I see being a woman as being a huge advantage. And it's something that I feel like, you know, fundamentally it is part of who I am, but I think that some of those characteristics, where particularly when I'm dealing with a lot of men and male-dominated client environments, I think that ability to read the room, to show empathy, to see where people are coming from, but also I think the ability to do that and flex my style is one of the things that makes me successful with clients, because when I am working with men who, or a group of men who can become quite aggressive, the fact that I don't meet that with aggression helps me I think if I was submissive around it, that wouldn't be helpful. But I think the ability to sort of stand my ground and have empathy enables me to almost take the bite out of a situation when there's conflict. So I had a very recent contract negotiation that was incredibly difficult, dealing with a lot of men. And I think just by being able to step back from it and position things slightly differently and think about what was in it for everybody else. They're not necessarily female characteristics, but I do think there is something about being the only woman in that situation, being able to help steer things, was one of the things that made it a successful contract negotiation for everybody.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome, Jules.
I'm going to record and diffuse this if you don't see any problem with it.
No, not at all. That's fine. Good luck.